There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bub in the Bloom, episode 37. Going to continue our pocket of ADP analysis, going 150 to 200 on some recent NFBC DC ADP. Going to go over some recent, I guess it's still the hot stove technically, but it's more like we're trading this guy for that guy, and it kind of works out for everybody involved. We'll talk about that as well and much, much more to get you ready for the 2023 fantasy baseball season, as it's almost February already, which is insane to think about out loud. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric. My co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're powering through. You might be able to tell with the voice that we're not a full go. We're not a full 100%. I got two bags of this eucalyptus throat coat that we're gonna try and lubricate the voice cords and see where we get. So a little bit of a different strategy tonight, but we'll make it through.
I like it. He's just hurt. He's not injured, folks. So he's powering through for us. Right. We're making it happen. It might be his Jordan game. We'll see, but we'll see what we get from Bloom, which is always good stuff. And we will power through and go straight into some interesting hot stove action. And this one happened felt like very early the next morning after we recorded last time. There was a trade between the Twins and the Marlins. Pablo Lopez and Luis Arraez are the main pieces of the puzzle. There's a couple big-time prospects, apparently, that went as well to Minnesota. So Marlins feel like they paid a pretty penny for Luis Arraez, but we don't really care that much about the price, I guess, more so the fantasy impact. So let's start with Pablo Lopez, who we've kind of talked about the Twins' rotation for a while. They've always kind of needed another piece. We also talked about how the Marlins' rotation was kind of overloaded with options. So how do you see this playing out with Pablo in Minnesota, and who do you think it opens up for in Miami?
Yeah, this trade's fascinating, man. Like, it probably has the biggest fantasy potential or impact of, like, really any trade so far this offseason, just because of who's going where. And like you said, the Marlins, like, stock of rotation depth. I think at least for the Marlins, who, yeah, had a 7-man rotation, this, I don't know, this is good or not, but breathes life back into Trevor Rogers' comeback bid. I think he would probably be the fifth starter now. Maybe Braxton Garrett. I'm kind of pulling for Braxton Garrett. Yeah. Big Braxton Garrett fan. But it's one less obstacle, at least in Miami's rotation. For Lopez himself, like, it's a lot more run support. It's a better bullpen. Give it that. So it's probably a good move for him. And actually, we'll probably talk more about Pablo Lopez later, because he is in this 150 to 200 range. So we'll kind of shelve it, I guess, for now. But that was a big thing I thought was more on the Marlins side, was like Trevor Rogers getting another shot, Braxton Garrett. Miami has to feel pretty good about both or one of those two guys to pull this off.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's right now, Trevor Rogers is Roster Resources' fifth pitcher. But I'm with you. I've got Garrett in a lot of NFBC 50s. I'm a big fan of Braxton Garrett and the strikeout upside. Maybe Rodgers bounces back. Rodgers is a fun one if you look at the projections. Like Steamer's got him at 3.78 ERA, ATC 3.99, the bat 4.44. So the bat is not a fan.
You put Trevor Rodgers and fun in the same sentence. I don't know.
It was fun for my angle because I didn't roster him anywhere last year. So it was fun to watch from the outside looking in. The projections are all over the board with him, which is very intriguing, I guess, to say. And it makes sense. You wrote about him a lot last year, talked about him a lot. And there was always like a glimmer of like, this should start working at some point in time. Like, what's going on? It just never did. And maybe it'll come back this year. Who knows? If not, Braxton Garrett's there. They have Eustery Ruiz is another young pitcher that might get a shot eventually sometime in the season for you deep DC type people. But it definitely clears things up because, like, last time we talked, they signed Cueto, and we're like, just more depth for the mess. What kind of felt like a trade was coming, and it made sense. It'd been rumored forever, and then it finally happened. So that's good to see it free that up. And then on the Pablo Lopez side, like you said, we'll talk more about that when we do our ADP analysis here. But I just wanted to mention this Minnesota rotation. It looks a lot better. Still could be better, but you know, you got Pablo, you got Sonny Gray, who we've talked about, Joe Ryan, Tyler Molle, Kenta Maeda, if he bounces back at all. That, at least on paper, looks a lot better than it did probably like a month ago. So we'll see.
In January, it does. Yes, I remember how beat up that Minnesota rotation was in the second half last year. And a lot of those names you just listed, do they make it to July or August? I don't know. Funny thing on just real quick on Braxton Garrett. Remember we did that like way early DC, started in August, continued it in October. I am the min pick on Braxton Garrett for all NFBC drafts and probably still will be for all time because I took Braxton Garrett in the, again, this was totally blind. This was the first draft. There were no projections. It's easy to look back on it. I took him 330 picks before his ADP. I took him in the 13th round at 186, and Braxton Garrett's ADP is 480, man.
Wow.
So I'm pulling for you, Braxton.
Maybe we need a bloom board of like just everybody in our draft. What were the biggest ADP discrepancies in that draft with the person's Twitter handle next to it? That would be a fun one to monitor at some point in time. Let's flip it over now to the Marlins side of things. Luis Arraez, like I said, went to Miami right after they moved on from who did they just trade? I totally was blanked. Rojas. Rojas went to the Dodgers. So he was their shortstop. Arraez is projected to play second base. We know he can play first base also. It leaves Joey Wendell at shortstop because one Jazz Chisholm is now moving to center field. So it was a gigantic domino effect. Like you said, this trade had it's like an onion, and there's so many layers to this trade between rotations. Now you have Chisholm going to the outfield, so Wendell can stay at short, which they really wanted, which kind of surprised me because I never really think of Joey Wendell as a shortstop full time. And then you got Arraez going to second base. You know, Jesus Aguilar is not even there anymore. We'll talk about that in a minute. Locks in Garrett Cooper, maybe at first base. Like, there's a lot of pieces that moved, and I guess didn't 100% secure playing time situations in Miami, but made it a lot more clear in the last like week now. So, what's your thoughts on that whole mess I just threw out there?
Yeah, the big thing, like, and I thought about, I'm overthinking everything because it's January, and what else we're gonna do at this time. The Jazz Chisholm move to me is absolutely fascinating. Like, there are so many different ways you could look at this. The glass half full approach is like, so for me, the big thing with Jazz Chisholm, love the talent. I'm just worried as hell about his knee and his back. Like, those are two things you don't want someone who, you know, where speed is his game. Glass half full approach is Miami probably has to think they're confident enough that Jazz is healthy for next season that they're going to move him to center field and have him learn a new position. Like, to me, that if you're looking positively on this, that could be a takeaway. The glass half empty is Jazz has never played center field before. Does Miami really know what they're doing? And is Jazz definitely is going to have to learn a new position, a really taxing position on the fly. What's that going to do to his offensive numbers? We talk all the time about how major league catchers coming up from the minors, no, it's not a new position, but they're learning a new staff. There's that whole part of the mental part of the game that they have to pick up while they're trying to produce with the bat. And so I wonder about that with Jazz Chisholm. I also wonder, like, and I know roster resource is just one guy, is Jason Martinez. He's got Jazz hitting third, and that kind of makes sense behind Luis Arraez and Gene Segura. Like, if Jazz is hitting third, is he going to run as often? I so all those things, like, I don't know. It's just a long way of saying, like, I'm not sure how to take the news from the Jazz side. Well, how about pro Jazz, guys, look at it great.
And how about the guy's got injury concerns playing center field now? Like, right, running around walls, diving. Like, I'd be more worried about getting re-injured in center field than I would at, like, second base, which is nuts to think about too.
So, right, how well is he going to learn how to time his jump into center field and when the, you know, a ball goes off the wall? Like, that's scary to me. So I don't know. I think it's a downgrade for Jazz for those reasons. I think the cons outweigh the pros, but could be wrong.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. And on a PitchCon, I did on a Thursday presentation, Chisholm was a guy mentioned on the show, Frank Stample. That's one of the guys he's targeting in the picks 1 through 50. And I don't blame him. Like, we know the ceiling that Jazz brings to the table. It's a 30-30 guy, and there aren't a whole lot of 30-30 guys anymore. So it's a phenomenal talent. And I've been Jazz 101 from day one. One of these years, episodes I'll remember to wear the shirt on the show. I have his Jazz shirt. I wore it to FPads, for crying out loud. This is my guy.
It's your boy.
But I'm nervous. Like, I love the guy on the field. I love the everything about him. It's just health wise, it's scary for such a young player to keep battling these injuries. So center field worry. Like, I was surprised. I was very, very surprised. Like, why don't you put Garrett Cooper? And he's always hurt too. But put Cooper in the outfield, put Arraez at first base, and keep Jazz at second. There's so many moving pieces. I don't get paid to make those decisions, but they do. And I said it earlier, and I guess we don't have to go deep into it, but like, Joey Winlow doesn't scream starting shortstop to me. Like, I just don't get it. They're in love with it. I know he's played shortstop. I just, out of all the options, I was kind of surprised by that one too. But anything else on this Lopez, Arraez, Jazz Chisholm conundrum we have here?
No, I mean, I think that covers it pretty well. I do wonder too about, like, Miami pitchers with Jazz in center field. Like, I just don't know how that's going to go. Like, dude is athletic as anything. He's confident as anything. He says he's going to go out there and we'll win a gold glove. I'm rooting for him. But yeah, we will see.
All right. The Twins made another trade. Like, they're trying to be like Jerry DePoto, just not to the name value, it feels like. They traded for Michael A. Taylor. And right now, Taylor is expected to be on the bench. This is a weird one because, you know, we've talked about, you still have Trevor Larnach. You have Alex Kirilloff. You can play first base in the outfield. They signed Joey Gallo. Buxton's healthy for now. I say that very nicely, for now. We thought Max Kepler would eventually get traded. He still might by the time this episode comes out. You have Nick Gordon. So they basically got this really good defensive outfielder, which is nice. Not sure the home for him. Flip side, now you have Kansas City, and it's kind of like this Marlins deal. It kind of feels like it made things a little clearer, potentially, on the Royals side of things. I don't know if it's the clear we wanted, but now you have, you know, Kyle Isbell or Eaton or someone else in the outfield. But it opens up Hunter Dozier at third base. It opens up Edward Olivares maybe playing more often. And it opens up Drew Waters in center field. Like, it kind of locks in a couple spots I really, really like to see. So how do you see this Michael A. Taylor trade that I think, if anything, it's better for fantasy for the Royals side of things than the Twins side?
No doubt. No doubt. Like, we all know Michael A. Taylor has very limited fantasy value. He is a good real-life defender, and I think – on Minnesota, it's just Buxton insurance, which they're going to have to, you know, pull out that.
So he'll probably play 100 games.
Yep. They're going to have to use that, pay that premium probably pretty soon. So, I have always been a free Edward Olivares guy. The last year, some of that was more injury. I think that opens up right field for Olivares. Drew Waters, I honestly don't know too much about. I need to dive in a little bit more, but like, he could be their everyday center fielder.
He should be.
Probably should be. But I think Edward Olivares, it's just one less obstacle in that Kansas City outfield. If Olivares is healthy, man, I love those skills. I always will. He just needs that confluence of an opportunity while he's healthy, and I think it could work. And ADP wise, Olivares, and this may rise later, but he's like 450. So
Drew Waters is almost like 100 picks later. Like, it's both intriguing with all this being said and done. And, you know, for Oliveris' sake, I really wonder if when that trade was made, did he walk into his, like, leasing office and go, hey, I could take the year lease this time. Like, we're not going back and forth. Like, give me the year and give me the better place. Like, that's what I want because I'm staying this year.
My man saving a couple $100 by paying the year up front as opposed to
he's like, I don't have to worry about, you know, I don't have to worry about the rental car going back and forth. We're good. So yeah, I'm sticking this out. I did mention Hunter Dozier locked in the third, and that's because this other trade that took place, I don't know what the Red Sox are doing because we wanted Elvis Andrus there. Apparently they don't listen to the show. Shame on them. Yeah. But Adalberto Mondesi gets traded to the Red Sox to hopefully play shortstop, but then reports immediately come out that he's probably not going to be ready for opening day. Yeah. Don't understand that move at all. But what it does, again, Kansas City, things get a little clearer. Now Hunter Dozier has a regular spot instead of platooning between third base and the outfield, whether you like that or not. It's his spot. And then Nicky Lopez can now be like the full-fledged utility guy, even though there's rumors now that he's on the trading block and might get traded. So how do you see this Mondesi thing playing out?
Not well. I thought it was just fascinating that the news that he may not be ready came out. Like, or maybe, I'm sure, I assume Boston knew this when they made the trade. I mean, they didn't give up much, but it's just a reminder of you're getting a guy who, although, you know, much cheaper now than where Mondesi was going, getting a guy who can't really hit, has terrible plate skills, and will get hurt. So, like, I don't buy into the Mondesi hype. We have been there before. I think the market's finally kind of smartening up and not buying it either. So I'm really not even like, I don't know. Mondesi has a 260 ADP. I bet that rises up maybe closer to like 200, maybe to this pocket. We'll probably talk about him on next week's show from 200 to 250. He'll probably rise into that group by then. These are not free picks. There is talent that you should build your team around that is a lot more stable than Mondesi. So don't buy the bait.
Yep. 100% with you on that one. Our final two moves we're going to talk about here. Brace yourselves, people. The Oakland Athletics. They've made a couple moves. First off, they signed Jesus Aguilar, and it's probably like not a whole lot to do, but he's going to play pretty much every day because it's the A's. Like, why not? And we've seen this before, Ryan. I know it's a bad ballpark to hit in and all these things, but a guy that goes super late in drafts, that does have power, that plays every day, even on the A's, we've seen this become fantasy relevant at some like weird point in time. So by no means am I saying run out to play him, but if he is penciled in to play like 130 plus games at cleanup for the A's, he's got 20 plus home run power. We've seen it before. Will it happen? Who knows? But I think it's interesting leaving Miami to Oakland and getting kind of locked into that everyday role.
Yeah. So when I put Aguilar into, and this kind of dovetails a little bit on Toby's great explanation, and everyone should listen to it on Bench with Bubba earlier this week about projections and aggregating projections and stuff like that. The way I do it is I combine HQ, the bat, and ATC is what I've got right now, but I use HQ's playing time just because we've got a small army of playing time analysts that update this stuff every night. And so if I take Jesus Aguilar, so before the deal, we basically had Aguilar for like nothing, 136 plate appearances, saying maybe he'll sign on and play a month or whatever, go to the minors, whatever. If I bump that, so if he's in Oakland, like, I mean, I think he's going to hit third or fourth. I think he's going to play almost every day. If I bump that and if I give Jesus Aguilar a full 550 plate appearances, maybe I knock his home runs down. The three projection systems have Aguilar at 22 home runs over 600 plate appearances. Say I even knock that down to 20. Aguilar comes out like not too far behind Joey Meneses. Yep. Goes behind above Tristan Casas, right around Brandon Drury. Like, not like a target, but if you're strapped for corner infield or you're streaming for that week, especially a week where Oakland's on the road, the numbers kind of play out in Aguilar's favor. So it's interesting just how much, if you adjust that kind of playing time slider on somebody who's, the skills haven't really changed. Yeah, the ballpark's a little worse. If you give that guy full-time playing time, which it looks like he'll have with Oakland, he's rosterable player.
Yep. That's what's interesting, because that's how he's always been. If he gets regular playing time, sometimes he's got a really good ceiling, and other times it's just he's good enough is what it comes down to. And it's, like I said, we've seen it time and time again with players on bad teams like the A's and stuff, that you just let them play, and it's interesting. So he definitely wasn't on my radar for any reason whatsoever, and now is. Let's put it that way. Yeah. The other move, don't understand this one. I love the tweet I saw. It's like, oh, it looks like the A's are even now trading players that still have options left. Interesting. Like, they're just trading everybody now. They traded Cole Irvin, which was technically their ace of the staff, which, again, doesn't say a lot. But I don't have a lot to say here. Cole Irvin, maybe the dimensions in Baltimore favor him. I don't know. No. He was streamable from time to time, but it was still sketchy as heck. And now you got Oakland, who had like 12 starting pitcher options. They're down to like 11, and they're none of them are really that great. This was just a really bizarre tweet I saw today when it happened.
Yeah, I mean, Cole Irvin himself, that's just, I mean, he's the poster boy for, like, maybe it's Zach Logue. I always talk about Zach Logue, but like the guy who you, on Sunday night, you need starts. Maybe he's a two-star guy. You pick Cole Irvin, and the next Sunday you are licking your wounds. That's going to stay the same. I think if anything, it maybe gives a little bit more stability for Ken Waldichuk, who I actually kind of like in Oakland as a deep, deep, deep starter. He's got some skills. He's like slow as anything. I watched him a little bit when they played the Mariners last year, and the pitch clock might be a problem for Waldichuk, but he's at least got some swing and miss, got some skills in a decent ballpark. So, like, maybe that, but that's about it. Cole Irvin is still not rosterable, man.
I guess on the bright side is it's just one rotation spot closer for Kyle Muller to potentially get a spot in this rotation. That's who I like to see. Out of all the options, at least let me see him get shelled if that's the case. Because, like, he, at least to me, feels like he's got the highest potential ceiling in this group. So, like, throw him out there and see what happens. So it's one less kind of roadblock for him to get out there. Because you look down at his JP Sears, there's like four other guys in the minors that are all going to get starts at some point in time. It's such a disaster in Oakland. I feel sorry. Scott Jensen, Carlos Marcano. I'm sorry, guys. Like, it's a rough one. It's a very, very rough one. Yeah. All right, let's do our ADP pocket of the week. ADP 150 to 200, and it's fun. And Ryan tweeted out this information from last week's show. The next day, he'll probably do it again, I'm assuming, this weekend for this stuff. But, like, he has the, you know, 1 through 50, 50 through 100, and the positions in each pocket, which is really cool. It helps us kind of decide when you might need to be aggressive on certain positions. So I'll let you have the floor here because I see a couple things that stand out to me. But I'll let you run with this for a second. And what are you seeing position-wise that stands out to you?
Biggest thing that I see is, and this is just the volume, the number of players by position in this pocket, only two shortstops. If you don't have a shortstop, and those two shortstops are Thairo Estrada, we will talk about, and Javi Baez. Those are your only two options at shortstop. The first three pockets, there's five shortstops in the first 50 picks, seven shortstops from 50 to 100, five more from 100 to 150. So if you don't have your starting shortstop, and Baez, quote unquote, you know, spoiler alert, will be a fade for me. Estrada's a little bit better. But if you don't have your starting shortstop at this point in the draft, you're kind of in trouble at that spot. And the prevailing thought the last few years is shortstop is so deep. That's not really the case, because a lot of teams are going to use their middle infielder on a shortstop, and it does kind of fall off around this time in the draft. So shortstop was a big one that I noticed. Catchers is pretty small. There's a lot of first basemen, and we kind of hinted at this a little bit last week with 100 to 150 episode. We've got eight first basemen going from 150 to 200. So this is a nice kind of spot to, if you do wait on first base, to go. You got Jose Miranda, Mountcastle, Rizzo, Ty France, Rowdy Tellez, Josh Bell, Cronenworth, Joey Meneses. Like, and there's actually different kinds of first baseman too. Like, some of those guys I rattled off are pure power bats. Some have some batting average potential. Like, this is kind of a nice spot if you wait on first base to to take that. So those were the two things, that the two positions to me at least that stood out. I guess a lot of third basemen going to.
I was gonna say there's seven second basemen, which stood out, but the quality of these second basemen aren't. I'm not gonna get the ringing endorsements. Let's put it that way, because it's we have. Let me slide on down here. Polanco, okay. Thairo Estrada, okay. But Brandon Lau, that'll be a fade for me later. Jonathan India, I'm interested in. But then Vaughn Grissom, there's questions. Cronenworth, Whit Merrifield. So maybe half of those you feel like, okay, rostering out of the seven. So don't just take it like, hey, there's seven guys here. We can wait until this bracket. Maybe not. Maybe not the best idea. The other thing I'll say is there's 12 outfielders. We've seen 14, then 8, then 12, a 12 again.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Alpha dries up quick. And after this one, I haven't seen the numbers, obviously, but just knowing from doing stuff, this is like your last realm of like really consistent or somewhat consistent guys. The next 50, you'll have some more. They'll be like your Benintendis of the world, your Verdugos and whatnot. Not bad, but just saying those names out loud, you should get an idea of what I'm talking about. Like, that's where you're starting to head, and just drops off from there. So by the end of this round, I'd want probably at least four or five of my outfielders, just throwing it out there. Like, or at least have a game plan of a couple guys you really like late. Like, just have that in mind, because it changes in a big, big way. And then similar to what we saw last week, Ryan, and we said it last week and we'll say it again, there's 19 pitchers, ain't a whole lot of closers, folks. Like, they're gone. Like, there's Sewald, there's Leclerc. Yeah. They're Sewald, Peter Fairbanks, I guess.
Fairbanks, if, maybe.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good. It's like last week wasn't great either. So closer situation, have that one lined out a lot better too, coming to this range. Yeah. So this might be your range to get your first baseman, maybe a third baseman. But we have a question later, and I agree with our one of our listeners. Not the most ideal 50-pick zone. It's not the best 50-pick zone in the world, that's for sure.
There's some starting pitchers I like. We'll get into the specific player stuff in a little bit. But, yeah, I thought that one of the listener guys' questions, feedback, was interesting. I actually kind of, like, spurred a thought. I don't know if leagues do this. I know certainly NFBC doesn't, but, like, home leagues or whatever, it would be really cool, even in redraft leagues, to be able to trade draft picks.
You know? Just to trade out of this range?
Just to trade out, like, so, I mean, you probably have to keep it to where, like, the number of picks are always the same. You can't do like three picks for one, because then you'd have rosters with different sizes. But that'd be kind of cool to be like, I really don't like, you know, this pocket. I'm going to trade two of these picks, upgrade a round or two, and then give you like my last round pick or something.
Or I'll trade you one of these and give me three in the next like 50 picks, and I'll take some guys out of that or something. Yeah.
That'd be pretty. If anyone out there has that, that's actually kind of interesting.
Bet you if you go to Fantrax, you can do whatever you want. You can customize everything you want there. I'll say that much. And you got to do the fab there too, though. So keep that in mind. But
this ain't not a sponsor. But then you drag their fab.
Yeah, I got you. Hey, you know me. I go full circle.
I bet old Onrodo probably has it too.
Oh, I'll play Fantrax. Fantrax.
I bet
if that's the case. Oh, you get to deal with that this year.
I do. I've been in AL. And there's not much. There is fab, but
yeah, it's a little different now. Their player pool's twice as big. Let's put it that way. That's just behind the banter there. So let's talk about some of these hitters first before we get into the pitchers. I do agree with you. If I had to pick something in this realm, I'll take more chances on starting pitchers in this realm than I probably will most hitters.
I like a lot of starters here.
But, like, I love Renfro. That's a guy I love up top. Like, the outfielders, I like a lot of the outfielders in this range. And I would basically between pitching and hitting, I want, like, a couple outfielders playing a couple pitchers. That's probably where I'm looking, all things considered, in this range. But if we talk catchers, it's Cal Raleigh, the big thumper, or whatever he's called. Danny Jansen and Kyber Ruiz. That's your three catchers. And Jansen, you know, looks a lot better now potentially, but then the belt thing came in, so now it's kind of questionable again. So that's maybe not as love. Kyber Ruiz wasn't the best seasons yet. This region, as for someone that, you know, loves my catchers, I'm not in love with this region for catchers. So I'd be passing there. Do you got anything on catchers, or do you want to focus on I guess we could focus on statistics. We did that very, very well. What's kind of the hitting stats you see that stands out to you here? Because a lot more red than green last week.
Yeah, we're starting to see more. And obviously, if you're listening, you're like, what are they talking about? I took, and this is out on the board too, but the ATC, just like last week, we took the ATC projections for batting average, homers, and steals. Like, I could put runs and RBI in there, but it gets really cluttered. So I just want to get a basic, like, where are the strengths and weaknesses of this pool by category? And so those are the three: average, power, speed. What I'm seeing in general in looking at this 150 to 200 range, and this is a little bit of a continuation from last week, is there are still steals available. And there are guys who are projected by ATC for roughly 10 bags or more. There's a lot of them. There's Ian Happ at 9. There's Bryce Harper at 8 over a half season. There's Javi Baez at 11, if you trust that number. We'll get to that in a minute. Estrada, Harrison Bader at 20. We'll get to that as well. Cabrian Hayes, Vaughn Grissom. There's Cody Bellinger at 11, Whit Merrifield 19. So, like, you know, you may quibble with some of the specific projections on this guy, but I just listed off 7 or 8 hitters that are at least double-digit stolen base threats. And that's something, at least for me, that's a little bit new. And again, a little bit of a repeat from last week, but you can continue to kind of build, even this late into the draft, those double-digit stolen base guys, which opens things up earlier in the draft. If you want to take, you know, the Bubba Special and Big Meat Pete, if you want to go Yordan Alvarez, if you want to go Vlad Jr., if you want to go Juan Soto early, I think there's enough stolen bases in the player pool, even this late in the draft, where you can make it up on the stolen base side. So that was one thing that stuck out.
Yeah, the stolen bases, I'm 100% on board with you on that one. Definitely stands out, especially a couple guys like the Vaughn Grissoms of the world and stuff. We know it's there if the playing time's there. Harrison Bader, who you said we'll talk about. The other thing that stands out to me is we talked about, like, power and, you know, 25, 30-plus home run guys last week. There's still a decent amount of, like, 25-plus guys here. You got Renfro, you know, Mountcastle at 24. I think that could be bigger. He gets screwed by that setup in Baltimore now. Mm-hmm. But then you got Giancarlo. You got Rizzo, we've talked about. You got Chapman, Raleigh, if you like him. Lowe, Rowdy's here for 30. You got Haniger. Like, there's a handful of power still sitting here to go with it. So, when you see this chart that Ryan will put out eventually, it's really cool to see when you're building your roster. And like Ryan says and stuff, middle rounds is the key here. You need to know your roster construction, the stats you're looking for. There's a handful of stolen base guys. There's a handful of big power guys. There's even a more batting average than you'd expect in this range. But there's not, like, a lot of three category guys because you're getting deeper in the draft.
Yep.
But there's definitely spots you can build your team with here.
And that's why these guys, I think that's a great observation. That's why these guys are starting to go later, is like, it's almost kind of pick one, pick average, homers, or steals. You're not really getting anyone. I shouldn't say anyone. There are some. You're not really getting that, like, all around production. You are kind of having to pick and choose where you need to go with deficiencies elsewhere. And that's why these guys are going, you know, 150 to 200. So the thing I'll add about the power, Bubba, that you mentioned, yes, there is power, but I can see a pretty clear drop off, like around 175. So, like, the upper half of this pocket, there's a lot of power bats outside of. So after Rowdy Tellez, there's, like, Mitch Haniger and Joey Meneses. Those are the only two guys projected over 20 home runs in the back half of this ADP. So it's almost this almost might be kind of the tipping point of the last chance you can get for a 30 homer guy that won't absolutely sink your batting average.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point. And then we keep saying the batting average. I'm impressed, actually. It's more the back half of this round where the batting average guys, because you know, you got Harper, but that's Harper. But like most of it's, you know, Ty France at 172. Nemo, I thought he's better than 270. I was a big OBP guy, but 270 there. We got like Josh Bell, Von Grissom. I mean, he keeps showing up here, and he's a guy, like I talked to Clegg for the Braves preview on my show. And he had a lot of really cool things to say about Grissom, that because it feels like for most of the offseason, Grissom's kind of getting like poo-pooed around the area. Like he's either not good enough to play the position, he might lose his job, he might be like a utility guy. There's so many things. But Clegg follows these guys. He's like, he knows them very well, and he's between just prospect stuff and the Braves. And he had a lot of very good things, like insights to Grissom, that it made me walk away going, okay, Grissom should at least get the job on opening day. It's up to him to keep the job. That's fine, but it should be his job. And if that's the case, the talent's like, you see the projection here of, 277, 14, and 16. He's probably got, like, that's a floor for him. If he plays the whole season at shortstop, you wouldn't be shocked if he's a 2020 guy. And that's pretty cool. I'm not saying he's going to be, but that's interesting. So you got Grissom, and you got Alec Baum, who's an interesting one, but a lot of batting average back here for sure.
Grissom is, not to give too much away from HQ, but HQ projections, he is a 2020 guy, a 268. Like the HQ projection for Von Grissom is very nice. And we do have, I mean, we have Chris Blessing on staff who knows Atlanta really, really well, and Brent Hershey as well on the minor league side, that they give those projections a look. So yeah, Grissom is he's a polarizing dude, man, because there is the, you know, can he play shortstop thing, and they have to move him to outfield. There is the, he was, you know, benched a lot towards the end of last season, but they had Dansby. So I don't know. That's really interesting intel from Clegg, though. I would trust him over a lot of the stuff we're getting out there. So,
all right, let's talk pitching now, because like I said earlier, there's only three relievers pretty much. A lot of interesting starting pitchers, though. A lot of, like, you got the Giolito, who I believe is going to be a lot better than last year, because honestly, I don't think he can be that much worse than last year. So I think this is a potential spot to maybe buy the dip, as some people would say. But you got him. You got Chris Bassett, who's a steady Eddie. Jomo. We love Jomo. Both of us love Jomo. Pablo Lopez, who you mentioned. There's Charlie Morton. There's a bunch here. What stands out to you, though, when you look at the pitching stats here? Because we said it even last week, the deeper this gets, your whips go out the window. ERAs are getting trickier. You might get some strikeouts, but that's about it.
It's interesting to me because there's just a lot of different types of starting pitchers. Like there's a lot of ways you can go filling out. And this is probably in like a 15-team league. This is your SP 3 or 4. In a 12-teamer, it's maybe SP 4 or 5, something like that. You can go with the like you said, the steady Eddie, like Luis Garcia, Chris Bassett type of guy. Brady Singer, I think, would fall into that candidate. There are guys who with major innings concerns but elite talent. There's Dustin May. There's Chris Sale. There's Grayson Rodriguez. There's Lance McCullers. There's John Gray. Like, there's a lot of those guys. And then you've got guys I really like who – have pitched well, don't have the innings concerns in terms of like injury, like a Sale, but like just haven't really built up. And that's like a Jeffrey Springs, Drew Rasmussen. And then, like you said, Bubba, you've got Giolito, just like the ultimate rebound guy. So there's so many different ways you can kind of go in this pocket. It's going to be really interesting. And like, this is every year, this is the part of the draft. I would not be surprised if we see two or three of these names post top 30 value by the end of the season. Like, would not be surprised at all. And this is why we're spending time on this pocket, is because like these are the guys where, you know, not really in the end game where there's severe deficiencies. These guys have the skills to break out, and so you just got to hit on the right ones.
It's weird because, like, you know, I'm not a pitching guru by any means, but this is like a region I like a lot. I mentioned the Geo love. I have Chris Sale. It's like they have no reason not to throw him, listening to things he has to say. At least he gives you the confidence he's actually like cares for once again, which who knows if that means anything, but the talent's there. We love Jomo, like you said. I'm going to say as much as I can, but Brady Singer is a fun one because he's a guy that everybody loves prospect wise. Didn't really happen. But last year when he came back from the minors, it was like, boom, there's the dude. We all knew he'd be. He was phenomenal last year. So I don't know if you may have seen this tweet today. I'm just going to throw it out there for the listeners that might not have. Michael Simeone, SP streamer, obviously it's in the name, phenomenal with pitching stuff, like really knows pitching well. So he threw this tweet out there today. Last year, fun with numbers, as he says, 2022 stats. Brady Singer, 3.3 xFIP, 18.5% K to walk, 3.4 Sierra, ADP of 172. You know who had a similar stat line, maybe actually worse than Brady Singer? That'd be the Cy Young winner of the National League, and Sandy Alcantara, who had a 3.45 xFIP compared to the 3.3, 17.7 K to walk, 3.42 Sierra with an ADP of 28. Now, the fun is, do we think Brady Singer is going to be Alcantara? Probably not. But what that shows you is they might not be as far off as one would think because Alcantara is an accumulator. We've established that. Like, he's very, very good. And I would go to bat saying he's a better pitcher than Singer. But what's to say Singer can't take that jump you were just talking about? Like, this is a pedigree guy. It's the guy we saw. Like, why couldn't he become a top 50 ADP guy next year? Like, he might not be the Alcantara, but we talked about last week, we tried to predict guys like Blake Snell or Hunter Green or Nick Lodolo. Why can't Singer be a guy that takes like a 100 pick jump? Why isn't that a possible thing? So it is a very interesting thing when you see that. I know it's just fun with numbers, and you could probably do that with a million different guys. But Singer is like, he's one of the guys you're talking about. There's John Gray in this range. Like, there's a bunch of guys that you could see being quite interesting. So I thought that stood out was kind of interesting to me.
Simeone, he didn't get ratioed that bad, man. That tweet had 180 likes and only 20 replies. That's not bad. That's better than both of our top 12 SP.
Let me see.
That's interesting, though. I think that's almost more of a, not Sandy slander, but
It was more for
that's Singer. Interesting.
Yeah, it was more like, hey, look at Singer's actually really, really good. Like, let's pay attention a little bit to this. Now, the downside, he's on the Royals. So if you play in a league where you really want those wins, that could be a problem.
The interesting thing with Brady Singer, and I don't know what to really do with this information, but for at least two of the last 3 years, he's been at the top of called strike percentage. So we look all the time. We talk about whiff rate, swing, strike rate, how well that correlates to strikeout rate, and it does. Brady Singer's never going to get – I shouldn't say never. He has not racked up the whiffs like guys who are going around him. For whatever reason, and I probably need to do a deeper dive, movement, control, command of his pitches, he's always near the top of called strike percentage. And that's kind of hidden in a lot of the metrics that at least I use. I know Alex Fast and Pitcher List, they have CSW. Brady Singer is always one of those guys who floats to the top and the difference between CSW and swing strike rate. So it's just interesting. He's doing something or some things that that – other pitchers are not. So
it's the Cal Quantrill effect. He gets those called strikes, he gets it done, but he gets more strikeouts than Quantrill. So don't misconstrue that. But you got Charlie Morton here. Is he gonna fade? I think one of the fun debates that you'll see a lot, and it wasn't even a debate we put on tonight's show, but Jeffrey Springs, Andrew Rasmussen are here, two of the Rays guys that everyone's big on. And I guess the biggest caveat always is how many innings are they going to get? Like, are they going to get raid or are they going to get to like go? I guarantee you, if we knew right now that either one or both were able to just go free each start, they'd be going a lot higher up than this. And so those are another two. Like, do you take the chance and hope? Like, Jeffrey Springs just got a 4-year contract extension. That makes me feel that they might just be like ready to let him go, like they did like with McClanahan last year. We'll see. But that's an interesting little pocket right there as well.
Yep. Those are two guys who I want to have a lot of this year.
Yeah. No, so it's a fun range. Is there any other takeaways from the pitching department here? Because like I said before, for me at least, this is a region I'll probably leave with a couple starting pitchers because this is a spot. It's a spot where I'd start to take my pitching chances here instead of like next week's pitchers. There'll still be some, but obviously, like we say with everything, and there's a reason they go farther in ADP, the talent level drops off. These guys, we can at least still see more of them making a potential jump.
Yep. I could totally see myself having a good amount of teams with two or three starting pitchers from this group. I really do like that. I like, honestly, I like this, and it's weird. Last week we kind of poo-pooed the starting pitchers. I kind of like this group more than the higher ADP from last week. So just one last thing, and you touched on this briefly, Bubba, but just to drive that home is, just no saves. No saves at all. So maybe LeClerc sticks around in Texas. I don't think, well, who knows if Paul Sewell gets 18. PitchCon attendee, PitchCon panelist.
With Alex Fast. I got to check that out.
Yeah, I need to see that too. I wasn't around for it. But, I mean, he ended the season injured. Hey, with Fairbanks, I mean, he's the third closer here, and who knows, Ray's going to raise. So, just to drive home that point of, like, if you don't get an early closer, you need to be pretty confident in your end game picks or willing to spend a lot of time on Sundays during the season trying to find those saves.
Yep, it gets dicey for sure. What else gets dicey? Battles, ADP battles. So let's have some fun with these. Ryan picked two. I picked two. We'll go back and forth. I'm going to say no right answer or wrong answer. I don't know. There probably is. So let's have some fun here. Let's debate. Let's have some for picks in this region. And obviously we picked guys that are going kind of close and kind of similar and whatnot. But Ryan, what is your first debate here?
So I'm just kind of picking guys that seem similar on the surface. So Chris Bassett and Luis Garcia. So I talked about kind of those steady Eddies. Those guys are going at basically the exact same ADP. They have 151 and 153. That also happens to be like the exact amount of strikeouts that ATC is projecting, 151 and 152, same exact whip. Chris Bassett is projected for a little bit better ERA than Luis Garcia. Just two very similar guys that I have a hard time kind of separating. I think I'd go Garcia over Bassett just for the age. And I think Luis Garcia has a higher strikeout ceiling than Chris Bassett does. I would say the team, but Bassett is now on Toronto, so I kind of like that. Although with the shorter fences, maybe that hurts someone like Bassett, who's been pretty fortunate on the homer to fly ball side throughout his career. So both kind of stabilizing rotation options. I think I'd go Garcia just for the upside, and I think he'll gobble up a ton of wins again in Houston.
About a week or so ago, I would have said Bassett pretty easily for me, and it's not that easy anymore. I just love the consistency that Bassett brings to the table. He's literally, like you said, steady Eddie. This is what he does. I'm not too worried about the Toronto thing because, he plays in the AL East, but the unbalanced or the balanced schedules, whatever you want to call them now, won't be as bad as many times through the AL East, which is a plus. And it never really faced him when he takes tough talent, even in the NL East. That was a tough division, but it's just fine for the Mets. So I like Bassett a lot. I'm going Luis Garcia too. And this could be a problem with the amount of podcasts I do because I consume information and then I get biases this way. But I did the Astros show, and Armchair Roto Russell Withers was on there, and he had a lot of glowing things to say about Luis Garcia that stood out to me and made a ton of sense. But it's like he said, for everything that people love about Christian Javier, which is not wrong, Luis Garcia can be just as good, if not better. Like, he's like a year or so behind Javier, so this next year he could get the innings bump. He could do a couple different things. Like, and if you think about it, if he gets that innings bump, he does go past Bassett in strikeouts. He goes by him probably in wins because he's placing on an Astros team that should just dominate out there again. I'm going to go Garcia. And I wouldn't have done it, like I said, a few weeks ago, because once I talked with Russell, then I started looking at more stuff and digging in a little on my own. There were some things that stood out. Like, you could take steady Eddie Bassett, no problem with that at all. You could take a guy that looks like steady Eddie Garcia with maybe more ceiling than we give him credit for. I think we've seen Bassett's ceilings, what I'm trying to say. We have not seen Garcia's. And that's where I go Luis Garcia for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't even know if Luis Garcia is that much of an innings. Like, I know Bassett has more innings than Garcia does, but Garcia has over 155 innings each of the last 2 years, 28 starts, each of the last two seasons. That's pretty damn solid. You can't ask for much more than that.
So if he can sneak into like the 170 maybe, that just catapults him. In a big, big way. So I'm intrigued with that one for sure. All right, my first debate here, two second basemen, one's a second base shortstop, one I'm a little attached to. Jorge Polanco versus Thyro Estrada. Polanco coming off the down season after his monstrous season. We all expected regression, probably not to that level of regression, but I think the talent's still somewhere in between that. And then you got Thyro Estrada, who finally got to play nearly every day, burst onto the scene for the Gigantes, and looks to be top of the order bat, everyday player, hitting 2023. Maybe he improves. Maybe he overshot his expectations last year. How do you look at these two?
I had to actually look this up because I actually drafted Estrada. So much to your approval, I'm sure. I took Estrada at the end of the 12th round. This was in the first pitch Arizona Speaker League 15 team drafted hold. So I was like, I went back and I was like, did I have a choice here? Or was Polanco already gone? And Polanco was taken two rounds earlier. Clay Ling took Polanco in the 10th round. I think that's right. I think I take Jorge Polanco over Estrada. The one thing, so I'm a big show me guy. I'd like to see Estrada kind of do it again. I know I've been burned on that a lot of times, kind of waiting too long for someone to show that. I don't know about the power with Estrada. I could see risk where Estrada is like a 9-10 home run bat. And I think that could really set him back. On the Polanco side, the reason I really like Polanco is you're buying the dip. I mean, this is a guy, he's, for me, like, he seems like Jorge Polanco. And I always get him mixed up with, who do I get? I get him mixed up with Eduardo Escobar. I have no idea why. I guess they were both on the Twins at the same time.
They're both Twins, yeah.
So I think, like, Jorge Polanco is old. He's not. Like, this is Jorge Polanco's age 29 season. Last year was like totally injury marred. He had a sore lower back in the first half of the season, some knee inflammation in the second half of the season. Like, I'm kind of writing off Jorge Polanco's 2022, and maybe that's kind of selective bias, but this is a guy in 2019 and 21 who is over a $20 player. I just think Jorge Polanco in a good lineup with Correa still there, gets the edge over Estrada for me.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because, like I said, I love my Estrada in our too early mock we did, or our too early real draft we did. I got him at 215. His ADP is like 165 right now, so I feel pretty good about that at least. But
I took Braxton Garrett ahead of
Oh, that's too good. It's a tricky one. Like, I'm going to take that Estrada because he's a target of mine we'll talk about later. I could talk about him now. It doesn't really matter. But I like Polanco. Don't get me wrong. Do like Polanco. I think what Thyro's doing, it's stuck out to me for a couple of years now. Rates and barrels, Eno and DVR, like one episode a week, always talk about a prospect. They always talk at one of the end of their episodes. And one of the episodes is Thyro Estrada because StatCast data from the minor leagues, he was the guy that just like jumped from his previous seasons. And then he came up with the Giants in 2021, the hard hit rates, all that stuff. Barrel rates through the roof in 2021. Those took a step back last year with the full season, but still, you know, 14 homers and 18 barrels. We don't like that. I get it. But one thing he continued to do, even though his barrel rate and his hard hit rate dropped, his max EV was the best of his career. So when he hits the ball hard, he hits really hard. And that's the thing you can't teach, as they say. So I think if he can do that and kind of meet his really good barrel rates and hard hit rates in 2021 in the middle from 2022, you know, his home run to fly ball dropped tremendously last year compared to that first season. I think there's a window of 15 plus home runs. More importantly, though, top of the order bat, he will run. They have no reason not to play him. And the Giants aren't going to be winning the division by any means, but they're going to still be competitive. That's what the Giants do. They're just annoying like that. They're like the Dolphins. Like, I pick teams that take me along long enough to give me hope and then shoot me down. That's what they do. And that means Thyro's going to score a ton of runs. And so I like him in that respect. I like the multi-position eligibility. So I lean Thyro Estrada thinking he's going to be 27 this year. We haven't even seen his peak yet. We're Polanco, we've seen the peak, and you're hoping he gets back to the peak. That's the difference for me. I like them both, but it's pretty close.
The multi-position is good. Actually, just looking at Estrada, he's one game off from outfield too. At least in NFBC, he played 19 outfield games. So like that would have been golden. Still, even in, I don't know what other, I know Yahoo's very liberal with their position. But if you're in a league with 10 or 15, you've got Estrada at second, short, and outfield, which is
wow, that's big. It's big boy nice stuff.
But yeah, man, 19 games. That's brutal because a second short outfield Estrada in 20 game eligibility leagues would be pretty freaking sweet.
Tremendous.
But yeah, no, really good point about the steals too. And if you need bags, I mean, I always say the cop out answer can be team construction, but that is a consideration for Estrada over Polanco. You're going to get quite a bit more bags.
He's going to run. Who's your next ADP debate?
Two third basemen who are very similar in terms of low batting average, high power bats, and they're going right next to each other. There's Eugenio Suarez at 157, projected by ATC to hit just 216, but to hit 29 home runs. And then there's Matt Chapman going six picks later, 225, 28 home runs. I think I'd lean Chapman just because of the team context. Suarez does play like all the time, so I like that. But Seattle is kind of brutal. I'm still not totally convinced about Seattle's lineup. So I'll go Chapman mostly for the lineup. The walls, it's interesting. I wrote this up for this in the Speculator for HQ this week. Did a little bit of a deeper dive where all these guys hit like 300-foot outs on the Blue Jays, looking at those new walls. Chapman's such a pull hitter as a right-hander. Most of his stuff goes to left field, and those left field dimensions in Toronto, I think, are like unchanged. I think they do some center, maybe a little bit left center, but where Chapman hits the ball, I don't think he really, he might run into like two more homers, but there's not much there with the shorter fences in Toronto for him.
Yeah, I'm leaning Chapman as well. It's a ton of similarities between the two. Like, so you're kind of grasping at straws, but if anything, we know Chapman's defense is so far elite that he's not leaving that lineup at all. The lineup context is better too. Again, we both like Seattle's lineup a ton. There's nothing against that, but even before the dimensions potential changes in Toronto, still a better ballpark than Safeco. So if you're grasping at straws, I go Matt Chapman as well. And I think with Chapman on a good season, and we haven't seen it in a while, but on a good season, I think he can still hit you. You know, we've seen 250 back in 2019. I'm not saying we're getting 250, but I guarantee you he can get somewhere a lot better than Eugenio Suarez can. And so if he kind of hits that little batting average bump as well, that'd be tremendous. Maybe not that, like, this would be a really fun one to look at in October, because this literally could be like identical again. So
I think Suarez has a lot higher ceiling than Chapman. I mean, Suarez, it was bouncy ball year, but hit 49 home runs in 2019. He hit 34 in 2018. Like, the dude has had two better seasons than Chapman's career year.
So, it's interesting. It's very interesting too. And I've grown to like Suarez more. We've talked about him on a few shows. Like, in recent years, it was almost like, just get rid of him. He doesn't hit for average, blah, blah, blah. But if you build the team properly, he can give you a ton of power numbers. And it's really nice to have at this point in the draft, especially at a bad third base position. So someone to think about there. My second ADP debate. This one's more just kind of a fun one. Do you want Chris Sale coming back from the injury, hopefully motivated, at pick 174, 357 ERA, 114 WHIP, 152 strikeouts according to Ariel Cohn's ATC, versus Drew Rasmussen at 177, 36 ERA, 119 WHIP, 137 strikeouts? Kind of said it earlier with Springs and Rasmussen. It just depends how many innings do they get. What do you believe in? Like, and same with Sale, though. Like, how many innings is he going to get? Like, it's a fun conundrum between the two of them. And the thing is, we know Sale has a Cy Young like arm in him. If it's somewhere comes out, Rasmussen might. We just don't know. So I think I know where you're leaning in this one, but Sale versus Rasmussen.
Yeah, you know where I'm leaning. I'm going Rasmussen. He's just safer. He's a big actor, and I need to look into it a lot more. But Nick Pollock unveiled PLV at PitchCon. Rasmussen was a big PLV guy, which is pitch specific skills. And I'm completely oversimplifying that, but check Nick's presentation on that at PitchCon. But Rasmussen really popped. I don't know. I don't want to spend a 11th round pick, 12th round pick on someone who has thrown like less than 20 innings the last few seasons. So fully knowing I could miss out on a Cy Young type season, but
people said that about Justin Verlander last year too. So it's pretty crazy to think about that.
I mean, yep. That's probably why I don't win leagues, is I don't get these breakout guys in the middle rounds.
I will say though, Justin Verlander, I feel a lot different than I do Chris Sale. So let's just put it that way. Like, I was in on Verlander last year. I'm not in love with Sale, but I am much more intrigued with Sale right now because, like I said before, I heard his interviews this past weekend in Boston, and it could be all talk. Like, it's stupid right now, best shape of their life, all that kind of stuff. But the fact is, he owned up to the idiot he's been. And he basically said, I owe the fans this. Like, you could tell there's like a chip on his shoulder now to prove people wrong that he was being dumb and I need to pitch well. And that, right or wrong in analysis, like that's the caveman in me. Like, I don't look at just spreadsheets like some people. Like, I actually think, like, hey, there's a second half to baseball. There's guys actually mentally do things. That meant a lot to me to hear that from him. So I'm much more intrigued with him now than I was a week ago. Rasmussen, I can't figure out, man. Him and Springs, like, I agree with everything you and anybody that touts these guys has to say, because these guys are elite talents. The Rays just scared the crap out of me. It's just like, it's so frustrating when you play them and all of a sudden they're going 4 to 5 innings based on 85 pitches. And it's like, what are we doing? I don't think we'll have to worry about that with Rasmussen and Springs this year, but that'd be my only concern. I lean Chris Sale here, but you probably can't go wrong with Rasmussen, I'll say that much.
Can't go wrong with my man, but the ceiling is not there. I think almost an interesting comp too is, I mean, we're talking Rays, is like Tyler Glass now. 7 yeah. innings last season. I mean, a lot. I mean, younger than Sale, maybe better ceiling Sale at this too, point. But yeah, he's not even in this pocket. I don't really know where Glass knows. He's a lot more expensive than Chris Sale.
So. I'll tell you, I got ADP up right here. Glass now, he's pick 90, almost 100 picks. I'll take Chris Sale.
I would take Sale over Glass.
Yeah, that's a good call though. Similar situations, as one would say. All right, let's do a couple fades and or a couple like targets and a couple fades each. Like last week, we'll get some listener questions here, and we'll run through these. I love your first one here. So, who's one of your targets in this range?
We'll kind of run through these. I know we're rolling, which is good. Jonathan India, I just think like the projections are not going to like Jonathan India. I think most projection systems are weighing 2022 as they probably should across the board. They're weighing 2022 a lot more in India's case than they should, just giving him basically a complete pass for the injuries. And India's young enough that I'm not too worried, like long term. If he looks good in the spring, I think India can snap right back to being the guy he was in 2021, which is 20 homers, 12 steals, 270 in that park playing every day. I just think you're buying a pretty good talent at a very low price based on a injury plague season.
Yep, I'm with you there. I love the speculation on India for the upside there. I went with Anthony Rizzo. We've talked about him a ton. We did it in the recap shows. If you wait on first base or you need some power and waiting on first base, you want a corner infield, we need power. Dude's got 30-plus home run upside in that ballpark. I talked about him on PitchCon as a guy in this range I targeted. Love the power. I think the batting average can get better. He used to be a perennial, like, 250-plus hitter. So maybe he taps into that a bit somewhere, but power is legit. He's going to produce that in that lineup. The counting stats will be good. And he's going to steal you a few bags too, which not a lot of guys at first base will do the later you get in drafts. So I love Rizzo in this range. And it's a guy, if you asked me in November, I wanted nothing to do with. And I've gone full 360 as I've done a few drafts and looked at the way things fall. Give me some Anthony Rizzo and that power production in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, well, and yeah, I mean, early in draft season, we didn't know where he'd go. So
that's true. He's a free agent still. Good point. Yep. Good point. Who's your next guy? We'll do two each.
We have not talked about, I don't think we've talked about old Uncle Charlie yet, but
Chucky has not been discussed. No,
no, he's not. He's a big target for me, man. 160 ADP, 187 projected strikeouts for Charlie Morton. Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander get all the well-deserved praise for how well they're doing, how old they are. Charlie Morton, I think, he's not in their class, but I don't think we're talking about how good Charlie Morton actually is at age 39. Probably because he had a 4.34 ERA last year. The surface stats weren't that great. He got a lot better in the second half, skills-wise, and I just think he's got another year in him. The Braves are confident in him, and the skills are there, and the price is very good. So Charlie Morton is probably my biggest target from a pitching standpoint. Springs is a close number two.
You can't get many guys that strike out guys like Morton do this late in the draft.
The K's is huge. It's a massive.
And he's going to get a ton of wins in Atlanta too, no matter what his ERA is. Like, it's just what he's going to do. So, don't hate it at all. As long as his arm stays on, he is legit the grinder. I'm going to learn how to pitch, not throw guy. That's what keeps him on the mound to this day.
Dude, weirdest career path. Like, he was awful for a long time with Pittsburgh. Yep. And then,
got the Uncle Charlie. So, good old Chucky. Jomo, Jordan Montgomery, I kind of stole him from Ryan. I think he can agree with this. He might have even better information on this than I do. But a couple of things, ratios. He's done it in back-to-back seasons even better this past year. He left the Yankees, so he actually got to pitch deeper into ballgames. Went 178 innings this past year, which was great. The strikeouts went down a bit last year compared to previous seasons, which is a bit disappointing. But in the end, his K to walk was about the same as 2021. If he can get that bumped back up a bit, that'd be tremendous. I'd be a huge, huge – I think we'd all be a huge fan of that. But I love the team he's on. They're going to win a bunch of games. He's going to get usually decent run support. Ratios, like I said, phenomenal. Let me do a quick thing here. Just for when he came over to St. Louis in August at the trade deadline, 3.11 ERA, 3.09 xFIP. And he actually was better in strikeouts at this point in time. His K to walk went up to 18.8 instead of 16.6. So a little better, fewer walks, more strikeouts, six wins in his 11 starts. Couldn't say that all that often in New York. So there's just a lot I like about him. And I'm honestly, I don't know if Ryan, you want to agree with this part of it or not, but I think people just look at the overall stat line from Montgomery and not realize how good he really is. Cause a guy with his talent level, I don't, and the fact he went that many innings, I don't know what he's doing at this point in the draft.
Yeah. Full agree. Like, Jordan Montgomery, outside of he had COVID in 2021 and missed two starts. Outside of that, he has not missed a start in 3 years. So, like, you look at the innings pitch total, and this, I mean, this just bolsters your point, Bubba. In 2021, 30 starts, 157 innings. Yep. Like, what is New York doing with it? At a 3.83 ERA? So he averaged five innings to start.
I know you rostered him a lot too. How many times last year we text each other or we'd come on the air on a night he pitched and be like, why'd they yank him at 5 1/3 or something? Like, every single time.
Honestly, if he was still in New York, I don't think I could take it. Like, from a mental health standpoint, from a just like, it was so rough. Now they would just not let him go. The third time through the order. We're pro Jomo here on Bubba in the Bloom. So
let's do a couple fades here real quick. We'll switch roles here. I'll give you my first fade. And it's a guy I fade pretty much perennially every year. And last year felt really good. Brandon Lau. This is just one that I just can't support. He's got back issues. He's getting hurt a lot. 65 games last year. He played 149 and 21, but prior to that, 56, 82, 43. Never plays full seasons. He's done it one time in 5 years. Sure, he's got power, but it doesn't matter if you don't play every day, which he does not do. And I'm just going to keep it simple with that. He's not an everyday player. They will platoon him in Tampa Bay. So it's injuries and platoon in that scenario. I'm out at this ADP. So I'll keep it simple. I'm out.
Stress reaction lower back is
not good.
Sometimes doesn't just go away. So. Nope. I get it. I would, much rather take India.
Von Grissom later.
Or Grissom later. India. Where is Low going ahead of India?
Yes, I believe so. I have it right here.
170.
India is 177. He's going 7 picks earlier. And he's going he's going 9 picks before Von Grissom. I'd even take Jake Cronenworth at 192.
That's your boy, Rake.
Yep, Rake, baby.
I'm on board with that. My fade is totally league dependent, but Bryce Harper. I just, in NFBC leagues and leagues where you don't have IL slots, it's so easy to draft a team right now. You don't see those red suitcases. Everybody's healthy right now. All is well. You'll just stash Harper and he'll be back in 3 or 4 months. There's a 40% chance that all players, this is over the last few years, 40% chance that your players will hit the IL in the top 300. And so it is very, very hard to hold Bryce Harper in early May when you've got three injured guys. That opportunity cost of not having that roster spot, speculating on a closer, getting a seven-game week from somebody who you need a spot in, like that stuff adds up over the full season. Now, if you have, and I've got mixed labor draft coming up February 21st, which has unlimited IL slots, I'm going to be fascinated to see where Bryce Harper goes because he's not costing you a spot. So this fade is totally league dependent, but in leagues without IL where he's taking those valued bench spots when so many guys get hurt, it's just really hard to fade. And then it's that whole mental thing where like, all right, my team was mostly healthy in April. I held on to Harper for a month. I can hold him for two more months. I can hold him for six more weeks. And then the injuries start piling up. It gets very hard to do that.
And there's nothing like holding a util-only guy that long just to top it off. Util-only on that scenario. So we'll go with just one fade each on this one because it's a rough fade to begin with. We've got a few listener questions, and we'll hit those up. Well, actually, you talked about it. I'm going to give you the floor because mine's Grayson Rodriguez just because he's young and I don't know what he's going to do this year. So I just fade him. It's an easy fade for me. You have Javi Baez. I actually want to give you the floor for this because I am really curious on your thoughts on Baez, who – this might be one of the lowest ADPs I've seen for him in a long time. Even Lord Zola is interested in Javi Baez at this price. So tell me, why do you disagree with Todd Zola?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to bring this up on our pitch.
I had to tee that up for you right there.
Ask Todd if Baez is an AL sleeper. Yeah, Todd and I are doing AL and NL sleepers on PitchCon on Saturday. So, yes, the case is made that this is a guy who really he's put up first round value early in his career. He is going at an ADP that is very palatable. He's a very streaky player. Like Baez was one of the worst players in the COVID shortened 2020 season. Sandwich that around like a $26 season in 2021, a $23 season, and happy funball year. A lot of what Javi Baez brought to the table was speed. And that's the biggest reason why I think I'm fading. I don't know if Detroit is going to run him. And if they don't run Javi Baez, like I fully expect the homers to bounce back a little bit. The batting average we're projecting at HQ, him to hit like 250, 20 homers. If that's 250, 20 homers and 20 steals, that's pretty interesting to me. But if Javi Baez is 250, 20 homers and like eight steals, that's pretty rough, man. He's got to do a lot on the power and the average side to make that up. So fully aware that he is in for a rebound, but I just don't know. He only had nine steals and 555 at-bats. That's not something that like slumps. He just did not run that much in his first year in Detroit, and I don't see why he would start running more again. Maybe the new stolen base rules, but that's a rising tide that lifts all boats. That's all relative. So for me, it's the speed is why I'm fading. Javi Baez without good stolen base numbers is a rough player, in my opinion.
I think one of our last episodes of the preseason is we need to have a bets board episode. I think we can have a lot of fun with that. I think that'd be a fun one to track for the season. We can maybe put it on a Twitter account or something to keep track of things. We'll get some listener questions here. I just want to hit up Jimmy D in the chat on YouTube, asked thoughts on Drew Waters. I just want to do a lazy answer. We talked about him briefly in the beginning. And if you listen to my last Bubba and the Bat Flip, he was talked about in depth at the end of the outfield section as a late round target. So go check that out. We'll fill you in there. Don't go reaching is what I'll say. Don't go reaching for waterfalls. Now we go to some questions here on the Twitter here. Lil Book of Calm, great follower on the Twitter. Harrison Bader is being projected by the Bat X for a career high season, 130 games, 236 average, 16 homers, 20 stolen bases. His career highs was 138 games in 18, 267 average in 21, 16 homers in 21, 17 stolen bases in 22. And he has many, many, many more stats that support things. It's so rare to see a player projected for a career best season, especially a veteran with over 1,500 career plate appearances. Are either of you buying the projection, or is this an easy avoid around ADP 170? I kind of am buying it, being on the Yankees and whatnot, but it's I'm not like in love with it, especially the I believe this the average in the stolen bases. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I believe so. Like, yeah, to answer the kind of first question, it is weird to project something that a player has never done before, because projections by nature are kind of that 50 percentile median outcome kind of a deal. But in Harrison Bader's case, like, it's really just the playing time. The per game stats have absolutely been there. Harrison Bader in 2021 hit .267. 16 homers, 9 steals in under 400 at bats. I mean, you prorate that to a full season. And it's not just, I mean, it's just him staying healthy. 17 steals in under 300 at bats last year. Like, this is a game changing type of guy. He's someone who, maybe I have like an all punt list. I don't know. Guys who I want to see in the spring. So, like, plantar fasciitis is no joke. That can absolutely linger across seasons. So I want to see how Harrison Bader looks in spring, how that foot is looking in games before I kind of make a final determination. But playing in that lineup in Yankee Stadium with the speed that he has, HQ 2020 projection hitting .240 for Bader, that's all dependent that the foot is okay. If the foot checks out and the plantar fasciitis kind of does subside, again, big if, I could absolutely see Bader not only meeting those projections, but hitting them.
Let's not forget 9 postseason games, 5 home runs, hit .333 as well. Uh-huh. I'm not saying like he has waves like that. I think just playing Yankee for the Yankees in that ballpark, and he's going to run. I think it's more reasonable. And like, you know, it's the playing time situation. That's how it's a career high, 130 games. Pretty big deal there.
Yep.
Andy Splinter asks, could y'all play a little game of Y draft X when you could draft Y with a few players? I love this game.
That could be a whole episode too.
Yeah, it is. And this is a game I love. And I know some people don't like it. I've seen it on Twitter, but I think it's a great strategy idea. Andres Jimenez, ADP 85. Thyro Estrada, ADP 180. I'll wait and take Thyro. I'm biased, but I like Jimenez. I think we might have seen peak power Jimenez. I could be wrong, so I'll take my chances with Thyro later on.
Yeah, I had Jimenez's box in the forecaster, and I closed it out with – so it was one of those pro cons, so a lot of, like, good things, some bad things. The biggest cons that I have was just a lot of last year, what we saw where Jimenez hit .297 was, like, purely BABIP-driven, and he is somewhat of a younger guy, so we don't know where that baseline is going to settle. But I think he hits like .260, .270, which is more Estrada range. The power metrics to me aren't all that different between the two. And I think Estrada can actually have more steals than Andres Jimenez. So I am playing that game. And I think you could get a Andres Jimenez light later on with Estrada.
And this is the tough one now. Logan Webb at ADP 111, Jomo ADP 155. Those guys were on target list for both of my last two episodes now. So that's tough for me to decipher between the two. If I got to be, man, I think I go Webb for the strikeout upside, but they're really similar. But I think I go Webb for the strikeout upside and the pitch mix changes we talked about last week. Like, he's still trying to improve himself. We're nothing against Jomo. We love Jomo, but I think I'll go Webb. I like them both.
This is a pretty easy call for Webb. For me, I mean, just the biggest thing, Webb's done it 2 years in a row. He's posted those elite ratios. Like, he's done something twice that Montgomery hasn't even sniffed yet. And I know I'm talking about surface stats and things like that. We all like to focus on the skills and that sort of thing. But ERAs of 3.03 and .290 each last 2 years for Logan Webb is just unreal. And it's just so many ground balls. Like, the guy is just... this is just such a floor. I'll go Logan Webb, and I'll pay the premium relative to Jomo. But I'd be happy with them both, honestly.
Exactly. A couple of just comments here. SMMS 79, mediocrity everywhere. Kind of accurate for this range. CJ Baseball says Sewald, should he be going this high with Munoz present and Sewald likely to not have a normal ramp up? Could see anyone drafting him there regretting it. So kind of a comment there as well. Jeffrey Springs and Rasmussen, excellent value by fantasy season. That was a comment as well. And then our last question we have here is from SMMS 79. My question is, can you find more than 4 to 5 guys you would want on your team here? Maybe it's just me, but I didn't realize how much I hate the players in this range. And we kind of said that earlier. This is a range where, like, if Ryan could trade out of here, he would. And this is why I think this is a range we want to leave with a couple starting pitchers potentially, because it's just not a great range.
I'd grab a first baseman, and I would grab
an outfielder and some pitching.
I'd grab two pitchers, a first baseman, and maybe
Estrada.
And maybe one of our boys, Estrada or India. Yeah. Yep. And that's probably it.
Yeah, give me Rizzo, give me Jomo, give me like one of, you know, Ryan's Rays, and then, you know, pick your poison at the bar.
Ryan's Rays, I like that.
Yeah, Ryan's Rays, and see where it goes. But yeah, another fun pocket here. It was not nearly as fun as last week's. Last week had a lot going on. This does have a lot going on, and I guess it was good because it pointed out things to us, yep. Which is the whole point of these episodes, is to kind of know like statistics and positions where you want to bob and weave throughout the draft. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what 200 to 250 has in store, because the way this dropped off so much from the last week's episode, kind of scared to be honest, but I'm looking forward to it. So what are your final thoughts here?
This is why we're doing these pockets. This is the place to focus your draft prep right now, is these middle rounds. This is going to make your draft. So we're fighting the good fight doing this. I feel like just even talking through this with you tonight, like, I feel like I've got a pretty good idea and plan of what I want to do here.
Yeah, I've kind of held off on drafts for a couple weeks, and it's making me really want to take a chance on another draft here pretty soon, because I've been like being patient and trying to do some other things. I'm like, I kind of think I want to. The itch is needs scratching here pretty soon. So,
I mean, you've only done 15 team previews the last 2 weeks.
So. Yeah, it's keeping me busy from drafting. It's that's part of it. You know, you occupy your time with other things. You can't, you know, draft, but. When then you do a show like this, I'm like, oh, that kind of seems appealing now. So I might want to go do this. But we'll see what happens next week. Maybe I'll be in a draft. Maybe I won't. We'll see. Hopefully the Oakland A's don't make any more moves. That would be great, because that's just a poor like decision, period. Unless they move to Las Vegas. That would be a phenomenal move. Let's go that direction. But until next time, make sure you follow Ryan on the Twitter there at RyanBHQ. And the Speculator has been out for 2 weeks, folks. Make sure you check that out. It's awesome stuff. As always, plus the other content at HQ is great, but I love the Speculator column. I like to read it on my lunch break on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, whenever it comes out anymore. I can't remember now. Totally blanking. Yeah, that's Wednesdays. The kind of guy I am. Wednesdays, that's what it was. You write it Tuesdays, comes out Wednesday. Yes, that's what it was. Yep. You can find me on Twitter at BDEntric. You know, all the other goody stuff I do there. Just follow me there. And we'll be back to you guys next week. This was Bub in the Bloom, episode 37. Catch y'all next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.